Welcome to The Critique. Today's critique focuses on From Beyond GDP to Life Coherent Progress, an academic white paper proposing a philosophical and practical deepening of the UN's well-being dashboard to ensure social and economic systems actively expand life capacity rather than merely measure output. Let's dive right into the feedback.
The integration of the theoretical frameworks can be tightened to prevent the paper from feeling like a sequential literature review.
Right. I mean, this paper is dealing with some incredibly heavy academic lifting, you know? And the structure of how those theories are introduced is a major point of friction in the text.
Yeah. The weakness here is really structural and honestly, cognitive. Currently, the author is dedicating entirely separate parts of the text to different philosophers.
Which is exhausting for the reader.
It really is. We have John McMurtry's Life Value Ontoaxiology isolated in part 3. Then we get Johann Galtung's concept of positive peace all the way down in part 6.
Right.
And finally, Humberto Maturana's relational biology gets its own dedicated section in part 7.
Yeah, and what this does is create a heavily siloed reading experience.
Exactly. The reader is required to hold these disparate, massive philosophical concepts in their head for dozens of pages before seeing them synthesized into the core architecture.
And that synthesis doesn't even happen until part 8.
Right, so this sequential structure just interrupts the momentum of your argument. It makes the text feel momentarily disjointed.
As I understand it from the notes, the argument here is that these philosophers are the bedrock of the framework. But, like, if we isolate Maturana's relational biology to part 7, aren't we treating a foundational worldview as just another puzzle piece rather than the very table the puzzle is being built on?
That is a brilliant way to phrase it. It completely stalls the momentum. I mean, if you give a statistician or a policy advisor 30 pages of McMurtry's theory in isolation, they are going to lose the thread of the actual UN policy critique.
They'll wonder why they're reading pure philosophy when they came for an actionable policy alternative.
Exactly. So the suggestion is to weave these thinkers concurrently into a unified diagnostic narrative right after introducing the UN dashboard's limitations.
Okay, so blending their concepts rather than isolating their biographies or standalone theories?
Yes. You have to blend them to serve the immediate argument.
So what does that look like when we get into the actual mechanics of the text? Like, a concrete example.
Well, instead of a standalone section on Maturana's concept of bringing forth worlds in part 7, introduce his ideas regarding language and emotion during the critique of the UN's 5 capital model in part 4.
Oh, I see. To show exactly how labeling something natural capital actively shapes our reality.
Right. Think about the mechanism of the UN framework. The UN labels an old-growth forest or a vital water system as natural capital. When the text discusses that specific terminology, that is the exact moment to bring in Maturana.
Because if you call it capital, you are legally and culturally framing it as something to be liquidated.
Exactly. You aren't just teaching the reader relational biology at that point. You are using relational biology as a scalpel to prove that the UN's dashboard is fundamentally flawed from the moment it assigns a name to a resource.
Wow, yeah. That makes the theory so much more urgent.
And the same logic applies to the other thinkers, like McMurtry and Galtung.
Right. So when discussing McMurtry's concept of life value in part 3, which is, you know, the idea that value is defined purely by what enables life capacity, you instantly pair it with Galtung's structural violence?
Yes, rather than defining the two concepts 20 pages apart, because they are two sides of the exact same coin.
Right. If McMurtry defines what is necessary for life and Galtung defines how systems silently crush life, fusing them gives the author a much sharper diagnostic tool.
Exactly. You bring them together to demonstrate that disabling life capacity is the very definition of structural violence. You fuse McMurtry's what is valuable with Galtung's what is harmful, and suddenly the reader has a unified lens.
They don't have to wait for the synthesis. They get to experience the synthesis as the engine of the critique itself.
Mm-hmm. It forces the reader to realize that a UN policy failing to measure life capacity isn't just an inefficient metric. It is literally an act of structural violence.
Since we just discussed reorganizing the theoretical concepts to improve the flow, we need to look at how quickly those concepts translate into the real-world action method.
The pacing of the paper delays the highly actionable life-coherent action method. leaving the reader immersed in abstract ontology for too long before seeing the practical application.
Yeah, this feels like a major issue of audience alignment.
It really is. The weakness is that the 10-step action cycle, which, you know, consists of recognize, rename, measure, expose, de-implement, restore, redesign, protect, coordinate, and learn, doesn't appear until part X.
Part X? That is so deep into the paper.
Right. And because the primary audience likely includes policymakers, statisticians, and institutional leaders, making them wade through 9 parts of deep philosophical and diagnostic arguments before providing the operational roadmap risks losing their engagement.
Let's look closely at the section discussing the core architecture. It feels like making the reader wait until part X for the 10-step method is like, well, it's like giving someone a beautifully crafted high-performance engine, but making them wait an hour to see the steering wheel.
That is exactly it. If my daily reality as a policy advisor is constrained by legislative sessions, rigid budgets, and quarterly reports, my tolerance for pure theory is, well, it's very low.
Right. If I'm reading about ontoaxiology for 80 pages, my immediate internal question is just, how do I legislate this?
And if you don't see the legislative blueprint, you are going to abandon the text. So the suggestion is to introduce the action cycle much earlier in the text.
Like how early?
Perhaps immediately in the executive summary or at the beginning of part one, and use its 10 steps as the structural scaffolding for the entire paper.
So you're giving the reader a map of where this heavy philosophy is taking them.
Precisely.
Let's figure out how that reshapes the early chapters. If we look at the first 2 steps, recognize and rename.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, there is a long section in part one discussing the historical limits of GDP and why we must move away from it. The author could just frame that entire historical opening through the active lens of the recognize and rename steps.
Yes, concrete example right there. You transform a static historical review into an active methodology. You introduce the recognize and rename steps explicitly in part one, showing the reader why we must literally rename extraction as life harm rather than calling it development.
Language shapes policy. If you call an extractive industry development, you subsidize it. If you actively rename it life harm, you regulate it.
Exactly. The reader is learning the methodology by watching the author apply it to history.
And then for part two, which breaks down the UN's Beyond GDP dashboard, they could use the measure and expose steps as the framing device.
Yes. You break down the UN's dashboard by showing how it begins the work of measuring, but needs the life-coherent framework to truly expose the underlying structural violence.
Again, teaching the reader how to use the cycle by demonstrating it on the UN framework. What about the heavier, more disruptive steps of the cycle, like de-implement and restore?
Employ de-implement and restore to frame the discussions of false efficiency and life and coherent capital in parts 4 and 5.
Oh, because they talk extensively about how produced capital, like an industrial agricultural system, can actually destroy the ecosystem it relies on.
Right. So when you explain false efficiency, you immediately use the de-implement step to show the reader exactly what to do with that information.
You don't just point out that a produced capital system is destroying the soil. You walk through the framework steps for restoring that soil.
Exactly. Showing the reader exactly how to use the framework as they learn it.
Moving from the placement of the action cycle to its actual mechanics, the most friction-heavy step of that cycle, de-implementation, needs more robust political anchoring.
The concept of de-implementation is correctly identified as a critical test of seriousness, yet it lacks a concrete strategy for navigating the inevitable political and commercial resistance it will face.
Yeah, this is where the white paper collides with the messy reality of global economics.
The weakness is really a matter of tactical depth. The material brilliantly points out that stopping harmful subsidies, extractive policies, and predatory technologies is much harder than simply adding new well-being programs.
Right. It calls out the performative nature of adding green initiatives while silently maintaining fossil fuel subsidies.
Exactly. However, it relies heavily on the capture and burden displacement audit without detailing how a governing body actually overcomes the entrenched power of the beneficiaries of harm once they're exposed.
The material makes a strong case for action by highlighting the necessity of stopping harm. But is there a risk that focusing solely on exposing the beneficiaries of harm might overlook the tactical playbook needed to actually dislodge them?
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, exposure is the precondition for justice, but it isn't justice itself.
Right. Just because you prove a multinational corporation is benefiting from structural violence doesn't mean they will pack up and leave.
Usually, exposure leads to entrenched, heavily funded resistance.
Exactly. The suggestion here is to expand the capture audit to include a specific political economy of resistance framework.
Okay, so something that gives policymakers tactical tools to dismantle life-incoherent capital without collapsing the surrounding ecosystem.
Yes. You need concrete examples to show how this works. Add a subsection detailing a transition mechanism.
Right, like the Small Island Developing States or SIDS context that the author brings up.
Exactly. Explain how a SIDS region transitions its tourism sector from a life-incoherent model, one that degrades reefs for immediate GDP, to a life-coherent one without suffering an immediate economic crash.
Because if a policymaker on that island reads a mandate to de-implement destructive tourism, they will panic. That destructive tourism is their primary revenue stream.
Right. So the paper needs to outline the bridging strategy.
Like, how do you phase out the subsidies from mega resorts while simultaneously funding community-led, ecologically restorative models so the economy doesn't flatline?
Yes, and you have to account for the human element within that economic transition. Provide an example of how to build margins for workers whose livelihoods currently depend on an extractive industry that has been targeted for de-implementation.
Oh, demonstrating how to protect human development efficiency during a systemic transition.
Exactly. If an extractive industry is targeted for de-implementation, what happens to the thousands of local people employed by it?
You have to guarantee wage sufficiency, implement retraining programs, and build care-compatible safety nets.
Because if you don't map out how to protect the workers, you hand the life-incoherent industries their best weapon.
Right. The corporation will use its workers as human shields, threatening mass job losses to incite public panic and force politicians to back down.
Exactly. By establishing margins for workers, you disarm that political resistance.
You turn de-implementation from a terrifying political risk into a managed transition.
Mm-hmm. It elevates the white paper from a theoretical critique into a resilient, battle-tested policy manual.
To summarize, this is a phenomenal, civilizational-scale piece of work.
Truly.
Our critique centered on three main structural shifts to maximize its impact. First, integrating the theoretical pillars of McMurtry, Galting, and Maturana concurrently rather than sequentially.
Right, blending them directly into the UN dashboard critique.
Second, introducing the 10-step action cycle much earlier to serve as the practical scaffolding for the philosophical concepts.
Getting that steering wheel in the reader's hands right away.
Exactly. And third, fortifying the de-implementation strategy with tactical, real-world examples of overcoming entrenched resistance.
Because making those mechanisms actionable early on will ensure the text lands with the force it deserves.
Thank you for sharing this vital work. We highly encourage you to implement these structural adjustments and submit the revised material back to us for another critique.